Usually when I tap the gavel, that signifies the beginning of the meeting, just so people know. Yeah, I guess. Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Job Growth, Energy, Affordability, Policy, and Finance Committee to order. Today is Thursday, April 7th. First order of business is approval of the minutes dated April 6th. Representative Fabian moves approval of those minutes. Is there any discussion, corrections, or additions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails, and the minutes are adopted. Members, the first bill on our agenda today is House File 813. Do we have... Hold on here. One, two, three... All right, Representative Luden, before we, why don't you just go ahead and do a brief overview of your bill. We'll take public testimony, and then we'll go from there. So, Representative Luden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File 813, first of all, I've got a DE amendment. I think everyone has a copy of it. I'd like to move.
Yeah, we'll move that a little bit later. We got to wait until there's...
Okay.
So.
The House File 813 addresses the fact that efficiency is the friend of business. This bill allows for efficiency and savings in the production of energy because the cheapest, cleanest energy there is energy that did not have to be produced. And it allows for latitude with the 50,000 kilowatt cap when doing cogeneration. That's the end of the song.
All right. Do you got any invited testifiers, Representative Luden?
I do have some people here that want to testify, Chairman.
All right, if they can invite those people to come down or person to come down. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. How are you
doing?
Members of the committee, my name is Cam Winton. I'm the Director of Energy and Labor Management Relations at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. The Chamber supports House File 813. We think that this is a win-win for business and for the environment. It would put to use heat that's currently being wasted, and it would enable industrial consumers of electricity, in some cases, to drive down the cost that they're paying for electricity. So we see this as a win-win, and I'd be happy to take any questions or provide any further comment, but we encourage you to vote yes on 813.
Thank you, Mr. Whitten. What we'll do is we'll get all the public testimony wrapped up, and then if members have questions, we'll call up testifiers as they see fit. Thank you. Representative Luden, do you have any other testifiers you'd like to?
I do believe there are some other people that wanted to testify.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bill Black. I'm with Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association.
Bob, you got a...
Let's see.
Not my pacemaker.
Yeah.
Okay. I hope that's not me. Airplane mode, everyone. All right.
Okay, thank you. Please continue with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association and the municipal community don't have an issue with cogeneration or combined heat and power. We just have some concerns about going forward in this direction, and we've been in contact with Representative Luden, who's been very receptive to working with us to address some issues. And those issues, basically, we don't have an issue if the state wants to exempt combined heat and power producers from offsetting their greenhouse gas emissions. It's only if those emission offsets would fall back onto the utility under the Clean Power Plan, then there would be some significant issues. So that's a concern. It's up in the air because of the Clean Power Plan is up in the air. More importantly, though, than offsets is when you contemplate a combined heat and power or cogeneration facility on an industrial customer that represents half of the sales of an entire utility, the loss of revenue would be extremely significant. To the point potentially where the utility couldn't even make payments on its bonds to pay for the infrastructure they've created to serve that customer. There are some other issues too when you've got a non-integrated utility like a municipal and a separate power agency where you have to look at the IRP process, what would happen if to that agency's renewable energy standard requirement, for instance. If a significant proportion of their total sales is no longer there, would they recalibrate the renewable energy standard for them? And would you then reduce the renewable energy standard, the renewables that they'd have to meet, because there's a lower total sales? You'd actually be replacing renewables with something that is non-renewable. It's an issue, and it just would need to get worked out. There are a couple of other issues that, you know, we're just sort of exploring right now and trying to understand from a regulatory perspective. And so we just like to take a slower approach and see if we could work to resolve those issues going forward.
Thank you. And Representative Lunan moves that House File 813 be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. Representative Lunan, you also move the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the form that you would like. Is that correct?
Correct, Mr. Chairman. And I'd like to also offer on the DE amendment a couple of oral amendments, if I could. Does everyone have a copy?
Well, depends upon what they are. Go ahead.
On line, page 1, line 15, striking out shall determine and putting in must make a finding. Again,
so 1.15, strike out shall determine and replace with must make a finding.
What is
the second oral change?
On that same line, Mr. Chairman, where it says impact statement, whether the project is likely to, I want to change the word whether to the word that.
So it would read, the 1.15 would read the following: must make a finding in the environmental impact statement that the project is likely to blah, blah, blah.
Correct, Mr. Chairman.
Not blah, blah, blah. That's not in the amendment. But so whether is replaced with that. Does staff have those changes? All right. Or nonpartisan staff?
I got two more, Mr. Chairman.
All right. What are the other two, Representative Lunan?
On line 118. And this is just for clarification for what the intent of the bill and the amendment is to strike steam and put thermal energy in there.
Thermal energy?
Correct.
Okay. And what is the fourth one?
Fourth one is on page 2, line 2.10. Striking, just getting rid of the words, as a primary fuel. It does not include a facility that uses natural gas.
Okay, so the does nonpartisan staff have these four changes? Shreela?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Anything you wish to add? We allow Representative Lunan to incorporate this.
Mr. Chair, I was looking at the first change back on line 115. Stating that the commissioner must make a finding that the project is likely to result in a net reduction of carbon dioxide emissions. Does that mean irregardless of what the analysis says?
No, for the if I read the whole sentence, for cogeneration facility is defined in section 216H.01, subdivision 1A, that is a large electric power generating plant and is not proposed by a utility. The commissioner must make a finding in the environmental impact statement that the project, oh yeah, right, the word, yeah, I see what you're saying.
We could do a floor amendment too.
Right. Mr. Eloff, do you believe you understand the author's intent and what he's trying to accomplish and have a suggestion for him, or should I?
Mr. Chair, actually I don't. I mean, an environmental impact statement is just a report saying what the impacts of the proposed project are. There's no decision that the impact statement itself makes. It goes to a board that then makes a decision as to whether or not the statement is adequate.
So I need to leave in the word letter, correct? I need to leave
Lunan,
in the word weather.
Hold on. Representative Lunan, can you say it again?
I would need to keep the word weather instead of replacing it with that.
Mr. Eloff.
Yes, Mr. Chair. That would still allow the commissioner discretion to either make a finding that one way or the other.
All right. So as I understand it then, Representative Lunan, it's the first oral change, shall determine is stricken, and include must make a finding.
Correct.
You're leaving weather in the amendment.
Correct.
You're changing steam to thermal energy on line 1.18.
Correct.
And then on the second page, you're striking as a primary fuel from line 2.10. Is that your intent?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's my intent.
And Mr. Eloff, you have that, so you'll incorporate that into your delete all amendment. Any discussion on the Luminant amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Do you have any other invited testifiers, Representative Lunan?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
This is a public.
Slip in there.
This is a public hearing, so members. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Well, with that, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Harry Melander. I'm the president of the Minnesota Building and Construction Trades Council. Our organization represents 70,000 plus workers in Minnesota, and we are in support of House File 813. We believe this bill provides an opportunity to capture a portion of the 55% of Minnesota's energy that is currently lost and provide an off-the-shelf technology. This waste heat can be put into a productive use, similar to what the University of Minnesota is doing with CHP and its construction of its plant on the Twin City campus. This legislation also gives us an opportunity to broaden the marketplace for utilities and large industrial users, and it doesn't impact other permitting requirements for CHP's projects. Recovery and reuse of wasted heat reduces greenhouse gases and maximizes the value gained from the source fuel, and very important to us, it creates hundreds of jobs for Minnesotans that are desperately continuing to look for work. So thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other, this is a public hearing, are there any members of the public wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill or give me some speech improvement techniques for my words today? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion and move to member questions and comments on the bill. Questions from members of the committee? Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry I was a little late to committee this morning, this afternoon. It's my understanding that the language you just discussed does not exempt this facility from environmental review.
That's correct. Well, Representative Luna, sorry.
That would be correct, Representative.
And
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, what's the pathway for this bill?
Center Register.
And Mr. Chair, has any agency that would see a fiscal impact indicated that there is a fiscal impact of $5,000 or less?
We do not have a fiscal note on it. We've invited public testimony. I do see members of the executive branch here who do not wish to testify. I think if there was a concern with cost, I would think we would know it, but I can't promise that. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you know which entity of government will do the environmental review? Is it a state level? Is it EQB or is it a local unit of government?
My understanding is that under current law, the environmental is the Department of Commerce does this. And this bill is, the last time I read it, is silent on that matter. It makes no changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Are there any additional questions or comments from members of the committee? Representative Lunan, any closing comments? Representative Mahoney, sorry.
Mr. Chair, we probably should hear from the department if they're here, whether they have a position. Mr. Chair, we should probably hear from the department whether they have a position on this or not. I know you invited them, but sometimes they need to be encouraged.
Okay. Well, I can't subpoena them, Representative Mahoney, but it's a little known fact that actually I can, but we're not going to do that today. So welcome to the committee, sir. You are here of your own free will. We are not subpoenaing you. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
It's Bill Grant for the Department of Commerce. The department has reviewed the bill. We find that the bill is a good step forward for combined heat and power in Minnesota. We've worked with the various stakeholders to this. Some of the oral amendments that were suggested were at our suggestion.
So it's your fault. I was going to take it out on Representative Lunan. Now I know who to blame. Okay. I'm sorry. Mr. Grant, please continue.
So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to take any questions that members might have for the department.
Representative Mahoney, is that sufficient?
That was all I was looking for.
All right. Representative Isaacson.
Just quickly, does this open up the possibility for another coal plant to be in place or more coal to be burned to create energy beyond what we currently are using?
Mr. Grant.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Isaacson, I don't believe so. This is a natural gas-fired facility, as I understand.
So there's no possibility that can happen. I'm sorry. Yep. There's no possibility that would be a background. Wait a minute. Okay. I just want to make sure of that. Thank you.
And unless someone defined natural gas as coal and coal as natural gas, I guess we could. Any other questions for members of the committee? Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Grant, the amendment that we adopted on page 2, line 10 of the DE strikes as a primary fuel and just changes the phrase to uses natural gas. So I assume that means uses any natural gas. I am not immediately thinking of what is 216H03, and are we changing current law for other facilities other than this particular facility that we're talking about?
Mr. Grant.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Portman, that was not one of our suggestions to strike those words. I don't honestly know what the author's intent is in doing so, and we haven't analyzed whether or not that might have some impact on other facilities covered by 216H03.
So we'll, I'm assuming Representative Portman has the same question for Representative Lunan.
Yeah, it looks like he thinks he knows the answer.
So, Representative Lunan.
He thinks he knows the answer. The Representative, the intent here was to make sure that it's limited just to natural gas, that there wouldn't be any out for another energy source. That's the intent.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Hartman.
Representative Lunan, does this change in law impact any facility other than this facility?
Well, this facility doesn't exist yet. So
correct. I understand that's why we're trying to pass this bill is for this one particular facility.
No.
And but we are changing a section of statute that may in fact apply to lots of facilities. And so that's my question. Would this, if this change in law were enacted, apply to other energy facilities other than this one we're talking about today?
Okay, hold on, because there's a couple of questions there. Number one, and there are a couple of statements in there. One, it does not apply to one facility because the facility doesn't exist. Number two, if it's a statewide change. If a similar facility meeting these requirements were to apply for this, the statute would apply to it. Whether it applies to them or not is entirely dependent upon whether businesses want to engage in this project or not. So does it apply to other projects? Yes, but do we know of any? No one's come to me and talked to me about it. Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the chairman's correct. This provision could potentially apply to other entities that are looking to do this.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know why we need to engage in the fiction that this isn't for a particular entity and a particular project when we all know exactly which project it is and which entity it's for. But what I don't know and what maybe Mr. Grant knows is what does 216H03 apply to more generally, and perhaps Mr. Eliff knows what sort of impact we're having on the law generally. I don't have any problem with when we are coming together to make exceptions for a specific project that we all know and understand, but when we change the statutes that apply to all energy facilities, I think we should just be cognizant of what it is that we're doing.
Mr. Eliff, did you want to add any comments about 216H03?
Mr. Chair and Representative Horbin, 216H03 is a section of law that prohibits the building of new plants that increase statewide carbon dioxide emissions. And I believe by as a result of Section 3 of the law, whereby this cogeneration facility or combined heat and power facility is not defined as a new large energy facility, it essentially exempts this proposed facility from that prohibition.
So another way to put it, Mr. Leftel, if I'm right, is that there is an exception to the prohibition, and this narrows the size of the exception to the prohibition.
By defining this proposed facility as not a new large energy facility, it's an exemption only for this facility, this proposed facility.
Okay. So if we go to line 2.19 and it says as defined in this section, da 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 da, we go to 210 and it says, but does not include a facility that, and then it defines what it is not. By narrowing what it cannot be, it is a more specific requirement. Representative Lunan is not expanding it. So the exception is smaller, not bigger.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I didn't get your reference because
okay.
2.19. I'm looking at the amendment.
Okay, so we're looking at DE1, and we're on 2.10. Mm-hmm. And if we start at 2.9, and I'll just read this here, it says, we'll go up to 2.8 actually. For the purposes of this section, new large energy facility means a large energy facility under this definition, subdivision 2, clause 1, that is not in operation on January 1st, 2007, but does not include a facility, so it's an exception to what the categorization is, that uses natural gas as a primary fuel. He is taking that exception, because right now the exception could be natural gas with coal, it could be natural gas with biomass, it could be natural gas with anything, and he is narrowing it to only natural gas. So he's narrowing the exception. Mr. Grant, do you wish to add anything to this?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd, after thinking about it a little bit, I'd see it just the opposite way. I think that the reason that this language was here initially was to exclude only those plants that are actually natural gas-fired turbines and not those facilities like coal plants that may use natural gas to start the fire. And I believe that this could expand the definition of what's permitted under 216H03 rather than going another direction.
Representative Lunan, who gave you this language, or did you conjure this up in your dreams last night?
I did.
This was derived from discussions I've had with several people, and I follow the Commerce Department's lead, and I see where, if you look at it, taken that way, that it could broaden it.
Okay, so
I missed that.
So, Representative Lunan, as I read this subdivision, it says, for purposes of this section, and then it lays out the definition of a new large energy facility, right?
Correct.
Okay, and within that definition, it provides exclusions to the definition. Is that correct?
Right, it contends what the definition is, and then right after that states it does not pertain to, right.
Okay, so the first qualification is it's not in operation of January 1st, 2007. Then it says, but does not include a facility that, and then it lists that definition.
So that would bring it back under the definition. You're right, it's a double negative.
So Mr. Grant, you're concerned that this is actually expanding the exception?
Mr.
Because
Chair.
It's modifying the not in operation as of January 1st, 2007.
Okay. Representative Hartman.
It broadens the exemption. What it does is that new large energy facilities are bound by the Next Generation Energy Act, except for those new large energy facilities that are exempted from the Next Generation Energy Act. Mm-hmm. And by striking the words as a primary fuel and adding the words a cogeneration facility or combined heat and power facility, or is expands the kinds of facilities and the number of facilities that would not be subject to the Next Generation Energy Act. So, for example, when this was drafted, the idea is if you have a natural gas peaker, then that's not what we're talking about. But here, when we say, well, we don't care if natural gas is the primary fuel or just a fuel, so if it's 5% of the fuel and the other 95% is coal, we've just exempted them from the Next Generation Energy Act. And now we also don't care if it's just designed to provide peaking, intermediate, or emergency backup. We also say, well, as long as you're co-generating heat and power, we don't care how dirty the power is. So I would say that this kind of blows a hole in the Next Generation Energy Act.
Was that your intent? Was it your intent to blow a hole, Representative Lunan?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, actually, I had just the opposite intent. And the conversation that we had about this was language that came over from the Senate. I am perfectly comfortable, if you're more comfortable, if we don't move forward with this as part of the provision, I'm fine with that.
Okay, so you're going to incorporate you're going to reverse your change in the oral amendment of as a primary fuel on line 2.10.
We'll just keep that in for now.
You'll incorporate that in the DE1 amendment. And then if you could just continue to work with stakeholders, I understand what you're trying to address, and
right.
I don't think there's any disagreement on intent, but this is actually a very interesting, it's like almost a triple negative, so, okay. Any other conversations? Representative Mahoney.
So are we reinstating the language on page 2, line 10, as a primary fuel?
Yes.
We are?
Well, I'm not doing it. The author is...
Well, we have to vote on that, Mr. Chair, because we already voted on the amendment.
I'm going to allow him to incorporate that, and I'm going to make an administrative decision on that it's not going to be there. If you want me to vote on it, we can do that as well.
No, I just want to make clear what the procedures that we're doing so that there's not a concern later on, and you've cleared up. The chair has made an administrative decision, and that's fine, and you're going to be incorporating it.
It was the author... Representative Lunan's intent was to not have that be in his oral amendment when he offered it, and we're just clarifying that. So, Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, I just would like to ask Representative Lunan to stop by my office and for us to sit down and talk about this, and perhaps with some of the stakeholders, because I have a real grave concern about putting Section 216H.03 in any bill that moves through the legislature. Given the sensitive nature of the litigation at the Eighth Circuit right now, that we're currently awaiting a decision, mm-hmm. and we don't want to moot a case and have to pay North Dakota $1 million in attorney's fees, and we don't want hijinks and crazy things happening in negotiations at the very end of the game. So I think we all have to be 100% clear about what's at risk in this provision.
Representative Lunan.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, we can continue the conversation. We actually started last year on the floor about the pre-meter efficiencies and things like that, because that's part of this move as well that's in there.
And Mr. Chair, I couldn't be a bigger fan of combined heat and power, and I think we need to find ways in statute to further this kind of development, and I favor the specific project that we're engaging in the fiction that we're not talking about. But I think that we have to be careful when we do that we don't do something we don't intend.
Any other comments from members of the committee? Representative Lunan, any closing comments?
This is a great bill for business. It does what commerce does. It's doing things more efficient. Again, the cheapest, cleanest energy there is energy that doesn't have to be produced, and doing the cogeneration energy use creates an environment, pardon my pun, where we don't have to burn other things to generate electricity. So I appreciate a yes vote.
Representative Lunan renews his motion to have House File 813 as amended, recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay.
No.
Motion prevails, and the bill is adopted. Thank you, Representative Lunan. Representative Albright, you're up next. The chair will move House File 2478 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Lunan, or Representative Albright, is anyone opposed to your bill?
No.
Do you know if it costs any money?
No.
All right. So, Representative Mahoney, I want to thank you for allowing us. We kind of posted this bill pretty late. We did this with your permission.
I can't hear a thing.
Please take your conversations out to the hallway if you must. We're not done with our business yet. Thank you. Let's give everyone a second to leave.
Mr. Chair, if I might move this bill?
Yeah, Representative Mahoney moves House File 2478 to the General Register.
That would be correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And I want to thank Representative Mahoney. This was a last-minute kind of posting, but my understanding is this is a Peace in the Valley bill. It's opposed by no one, has stakeholder consensus. Representative Albright, looks like you have a testifier with you today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do. This is the annual session, or the session work comp adjustment bill. I'd like to thank those in the workforce, including Representative Mahoney, for contributing to the efforts that you see now before you in House File 2478. With that, I'll turn it over to my testifier for the briefest of comments.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Chris Liefeld. I'm Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Labor and Industry. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today about House File 2478. The bill is divided into two articles, and as been stated, the bill has been approved, has been looked at closely and approved by the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council. Article 1 impacts and relates to the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. The language in this article was brought to the Advisory Council by Chief Judge Patricia Millen. It's mainly a technical article and includes the following: clarifies the two situations where the Work Comp Court of Appeals awards attorney fees, and eliminates the requirement that the appellant pay a bond. Cost bond can still be required if a party requests one in extraordinary circumstances, but it is no longer mandatory. This change will make the Work Comp Court of Appeals requirement consistent with the existing appellate court rule in non-workers' compensation cases. Article 2 is identified as department proposals. The first change relates to the attachment standard for electronic transactions. This law, was, as you may recall, was enacted last year to require workers' compensation providers and insurers to use one standard electronic format to electronically transmit and receive relevant medical records or reports with the medical bill. This this issue is being addressed because concerns was brought to us by providers large and small that they need more time to implement this. So the language extends the implementation date 6 months to July 1, 2017, and also more specifically defines the format that should be used. Section 2 in the article is a housekeeping amendment to accurately reflect the current state agency that administers workers' compensation claims of injured state workers. So it changes it to the Department of Administration.
Mr. Chair, that completes our testimony.
This is a public hearing. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion and move to member questions and comments. Any closing comments, Representative Albright?
No.
Representative Mahoney renews his motion to have House File 2478 recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Albright. Thank you, Vice Testifier. Representative O'Neill, House File 3512.
Solid work. Really, we better stuff.
Representative O'Neill, are we sending it to the General Register as well? Or no, we're laying this one over, right? Okay. So, do you have a preference? Okay. Representative O'Neill moves House File 3512. Be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Same questions for you, Representative O'Neill. Is anyone opposed to this bill, and does it cost any money?
No, Mr. Chair. This is an agreed-upon bill by the Advisory Council for the Unemployment Insurance, and it has no fiscal cost.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Craig Gustafson, General Counsel with the Department of Employment and Economic Development. This is House File 3512 is the UI Advisory Council annual bill. It's comprised of three articles. The first article is on policy, second article is on housekeeping, and the third article is technical provisions. One of the main provisions in the bill is actually Section 1 of Article 1. We're redoing our method for determining tax rates for new employers, new businesses. Now our technology exists so we can have a fairer method of calculating when someone starts a business, what rate should be assigned to that new business. Under the experience rating system that the Unemployment Insurance Program uses, your tax rates are based on the amount of benefits paid out to your workers and former workers. You can't do that when you are a new employer. So we have to estimate what that rate should be. The new rate will be provide an average of what already existing employers in that same industry would pay. So we think it's a much fairer proposal for determining new tax rates, and it was no opposition in the UI Advisory Council for that provision. Happy to take any questions that the committee may have.
Is it correct that the law as it exists today automatically put them at the high experience rating?
Well, current law provides for two rates. A high experience rating rate for employers who are, say, in construction or other high experience rating industries, and a non-high rate, which is for all other employers. Currently, that's 1.49%. By federal law, the lowest it can be is 1%, but the current rate is 1.49%.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious to know, average can sometimes be a nebulous term. How do you arrive at the average?
The testifier.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, the new proposal would provide for us using the North American Industrial Classification System. So for all non-high experience rating industries, we would go down to two digits of that classification system that divides up all the employers in the state of Minnesota. So that would give us 23 different categories. For construction industry, we can go down to five digits, though, so we can get a little more specific because the variations in experience rates in the construction industry are much bigger than variations in other industries.
And Mr. Chair, to that
Representative
point.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. And to that point, when we were meeting about this bill ahead of time, a little over 90% of those new employers were actually seeing a reduction in their rate, and so that's a good thing for new employers.
Any other questions or comments from members of the committee? Representative O'Neill, any closing comments?
It's a good bill. I just encourage your vote.
With that, Representative O'Neill renews her motion to have House File 3512 recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Representative Metza.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd motion my House File 2869 be referred to the pass and referred to the General Register.
Yeah, right. Representative Metza moves that House File 2869 be considered for possible inclusion in a later bill. Representative Metza.
So this is a bill that essentially allows an agreement that was made back in 2005 for the Laurentian Energy Authority. We had a deal with Xcel to sell back some renewable power derived in our area from biomass, and it allows four depreciable options essentially, and the main ones are going to be loading, storage, and transportation equipment. My understanding is it's fine with Xcel, and they are neutral on the bill and would essentially make it retroactive back to January 1st, 2014, when we felt that the technical error was made.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Terry Leone with the Laurentian Energy Authority. First of all, I'd like to thank the committee for hearing our bill. We are the communities of Hibbing and Virginia are both co-generating facilities, CHP, and we were very fortunate back in 2005 to find this opportunity and to partner with Xcel. And for the past 9 years, we've had a very successful partnership. However, as any cost of doing business would dictate, it was uncertain at that time in 2005 what energy costs would do. And so in 2013, we were back in front of you again, asking for a fuel adjustment clause to be added. You graciously allowed that through legislative action. And now, just as a technical correction, we're asking you to include depreciation, which is a generally accepted business cost to this. And as Representative Metza said, Xcel Energy is neutral on this position.
You have any other invited testifiers, Representative Metza?
No, Mr. Chair.
This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion and move to member questions. Representative Scott and then Hortman. Representative Scott.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. How much additional money will Hibbing and Virginia get as a result of this bill?
To either Representative Metza or the testifier.
Either one.
Either one, yeah.
You know, how much more will they be paid for electricity?
How much more will we pay for electricity?
Will you be paid for the electricity, the cities of Hibbing and Virginia?
Representative Metza.
This would, from 2014, from my understanding and reading, it's about $575,000.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what price does Xcel currently pay for the electricity per kilowatt hour, or what's produced there at Laurentian?
Mr. Chair, Representative, they are currently paying, on average, $109.65 per megawatt hour. That's 1,000 kilowatts.
Okay.
Representative Scott?
Yep. And so basically, you know, the higher cost per megawatt will be passed down to Xcel Energy payers. Am I right?
To either of the testifiers. Representative Metza? Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Scott, correct. And that cost, just so you know, is around 0.33 cents per year to a ratepayer in Xcel. Total in that year.
And so, you know, back when this, thank you, Mr. Chair, so when this was originally, this bill was written, why weren't these costs built in kind of to the bill so that ratepayers would know?
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Scott, I think it was a technical oversight on everyone's behalf and that the intent was to have this built in. Now we're adjusting that.
Well,
Representative
Mr.
Scott.
Mr. Thank you. Could I ask, I'd like to ask Mr. Eliff a question. And how many times has this deal been reworked over the years, Mr. Eliff?
Mr. Eliff. And you can make up a number and none of us will know.
Well,
just so you know, it's
Mr. Chair and Representative Scott, all I feel comfortable doing is
in looking at the history section of the statutes to maybe tell you how many amendments were made to this section of law since 1994. Since 1994, this section of law has been amended 15 times.
Representative Scott.
Wow, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Metza, why should we do yet one more favor for the folks in the Iron Range when the electricity is higher? This thing seems to be just constantly troublesome and needing amended. Why should we do yet another? Give me your best pitch.
Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Scott. With respect, what favors would you be referring to in the past?
Representative Scott.
Oh, gosh. Well, let's see. I could get out the statute books and talk about favors to the Iron Range, carve-outs and different things that they've received. But, you know.
Is there a question there or a comment?
That was my comment back, I guess. So, okay.
Yeah. Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. She asked all the questions and far more than I was going to ask, and I would just like to thank Representative Metza. Because if Representative Rukavina were here, he would just explain that the Iron Range helped us win World War II, and I'd like to thank you for that.
Any other questions for members of the committee? Representative Metza, any closing comments?
No. Again, I guess I would just renew my motion to pass and move to the General Register.
Do you want to vote on this? Do you actually want to vote on this? I don't think you do. You're the author of the bill, though, and you're making the motion. So, I was kidding. I thought you were kidding around when you said it. But is that
no? I don't think it's that controversial. I mean, if we want to get Excel down here to talk about it, I don't think it's a big issue. It's a very localized issue, helping a metropolitan community get their rates adjusted so that they could meet their renewable standards. Our communities bought this project, and we've been in a long-standing working relationship with them.
Because I'm trying to think here, if the author...
Of course, Mr. Chair, it's to your discretion. But
yeah, I'm trying to figure out procedurally. I guess the author makes the motion.
Mr. Chair, I have a question while
Representative Hartman, yeah, go ahead.
While our member who's in his sophomore term thinks about the choices before him and whether he'd rather be laid over and be in your bill or have a vote right now and maybe not have a future. I would like you maybe at this time to tell us a little bit about your plans for the potential committee bill, because you had an, I presume, informative caucus last night.
Yeah, I'll cover that in a second. I think you would be wise to follow the counsel of the lead of your... We have not caucused this provision yet, and generally we lay these things over, but if you want the committee to take action on it, I suspect that there'll be a negative vote on it today, just because members were not ready to vote on it. But that is, I guess I'm trying to think, when the author says they want to make the motion and the chair is telling you not to, I guess I really can't stop the author from making the motion. I just explain to them it's not in their best interests.
Mr. Right? Chair, I would like to echo your sentiments.
So Representative Metza, you want to state your motion before we...
I would be more than happy to go with the chair's recommendation.
All right, so with that, Representative Metza renews his motion to have House File 2869 laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, and I apologize for the miscommunication, Representative Metza. So,
thank you.
Yep, Representative Hortman, so the targets are out now, and so Ways and Means will be adopting those later on today. The schedule for next week is that we have to pass our bill by the end of the week. So I've begun some informal conversations. What my preference is always to take public testimony, complete public testimony, mark up the bill, and then take action on the bill in separate events, right? So I don't like to take public testimony and then immediately move to amendments and then immediately vote to vote on the final passage. I prefer to have the markup and passage of the bill be one day and have public testimony be on another day or 2 days if necessary. That being said, this deadline is earlier than I anticipated. I'm still trying to get clarification on why it's so early. Because when I look at the deadline of when bills got to be out of Ways and Means, it doesn't seem like we would have to pass this the end of next week. That's the calendar I've been given. I'm still looking into it, but right now members of the committee should plan on, we'll be spending a lot of time in committee next week. We'll have a 24-hour rule, or at least 24-hour rule, for amendments to the bill. Amendments to the amendments will be subject to the discretion of the chair. The in terms of location and timing, my preference would be to maybe have that public testimony be more towards the late afternoon and early evening as opposed to breaking it up into multiple chunks. But like I said, I got my deadline yesterday, and so I'm working with staff right now to find out what that's going to be. But we do have to pass it next week, so I guess we could, in theory, we could wait till Saturday to pass it. My preference would be not to do that. But at the same time, I know that sometimes when we push things faster, we have the unintended consequence of slowing things down. So, Representative Portman.
What's your target?
It's 11,600 and something thousand. Yeah.
General fund?
Yep. To the plus.
I think that's all my questions. Well, one more question. So you will post a bill. Presumably, after you post that bill, you will get all sorts of feedback, right? And then you will have a DE. And we will really be amending the DE. So will we have 24 hours after you post the language we're really going to be working on to craft amendments? Because let's just say your House File 847 and I'm drafting amendments to that, and then you post a DE and I don't have, you post that at the exact same time I post all my amendments, and then we're working off completely different text.
No, what will happen is when the omnibus bill is presented to the public and shared with everyone, it will be a delete all amendment. It'll be, this is the, the research summary will be crafted to delete all amendment, and amendments should be drafted to that. So then what we'll do is when we present the bill formally in committee, we will move it. We'll then adopt that. So now that the vehicle in front of us will be that DE1. So then at that point,
we'll have 24 hours after that.
Well, at least. I mean, okay. The important thing is that we want to get it out there as soon as we can, because unavoidably there are, the yeah. chair will make a mistake, right? Unavoidably. So that's the intent. But no, my experience has been that when majority parties try to hurry up and rush things through and say you can't offer amendments, it ends up slowing it down. So we want to, if people want to give cracks on it, we'll make sure we get that out there. But in terms of a definitive timeline, just kind of work backwards from the absolute latest we could pass this is Saturday. My preference would be to pass it on Friday. So then you factor in how long public testimony is, introduction of the bill, amendments and markups, and kind of work back from there. Hopefully we have a more definitive time frame for you and Representative Mahoney by, I'm hoping tomorrow afternoon, but I want to check with staff because we're obviously got work to do this weekend.
And then
schedule by tomorrow afternoon.
Representative Mahoney, that's my hope. If we don't have a definitive schedule by tomorrow afternoon, we got other problems. But I just want to make sure that I consult with staff members and nonpartisan staff to make sure before I have my preferences on when it should be, and I've shared that with some staff members in terms of timing. But before I announce it, I want to make sure that everyone's on board with it.
Mr.
Representative Portman.
Then do you understand, do you know yet whether or not Ways and Means plans to put these all on one bill or whether they will travel separately?
I know that I have a high degree of confidence that at the end of the day it doesn't matter because the Senate's going to send back one bill to us. They're not going to send us back multiple bills. We always argue for them too, and they never do. Whether there are 7 or 8 or 9 or a different number, I don't know that yet. It hasn't been shared with me. I would suspect that you'll see more than one go out of the House, but that if the decision's been made, I don't know about it, and I don't think the decision has been made.
Well, given that you're in the majority and I'm in the minority and you're in those conversations and I'm not, I would just say that the chances of us doing some good work in some issue areas is greater if we have more individual bills than if we have one large bill, because one large bill kind of leads to a potential of nothing happening.
Representative Hartman, I agree with you 110%, and I think this is your 12th year and my 12th year in the legislature, and I think every session the House has argued that approach. And every session the Senate, regardless of who's in control, has argued that there should be one bill.
Yes.
And the Senate has won that argument. They're 5-0, as long as I've been here. We're due, yeah. I suspect they're going to go 6-0. But, you can't make the Senate send back more than one bill. You just can't do it. And so we'll see what happens, but I would expect that you'll see more than one bill coming out of the House. The Senate will only send back one, but we'll see where it goes. Any other questions from members of the committee? Representative Clark.
So I've had a number of bills in your committee, and I've yet to have a hearing on any of them. So my question is, would you rather
I mean, I don't know if you intend to hear any bills or if you would like us to do our bills as amendments to get them heard. I mean, I'm willing to do either, but it seems to me it would be good to know which way works best.
Well, we definitely, I mean, we, members can always offer amendments to the bills. Certainly, we're, the current plan is still to hear some bills on Monday as well.
Yes, okay.
So, I would say, you know, practice the Phyllis Kahn strategy of legislating, which is you take your bill and try to put it into many places at once at the same time. That increases your chance of passage. But I don't have a list of bills we're even hearing on Monday yet, Representative Clark. So,
thanks.
Any other questions or comments? And again, as soon as we have a schedule, just the important thing is just kind of plan for a busy week next week that I prefer Friday, but it may be Saturday to pass the bill, depending upon public testimony and stuff. So any other questions? With that, thanks, everyone. We're adjourned.